It's all good.
Okay. Well, let's get into Exodus 5 then. Do we want to take an hour or do we want to just take half an hour?
Don't bother me either way. I'm good either
I
way.
I sent you a text telling you I wasn't feeling too good tonight, so I could settle for the half hour.
Okay, let's go half hour then. So first of all, sorry, just got wrapped up in what I was doing and just completely forgot what day
Sorry.
it was. And even though I had set myself up to do all to get on as soon as I got home, I just
Haven't been there.
so
Lisa.
oh, that's right. We didn't get into Zipporah. Well, no, we did. We did end up talking about that with Zipporah and Abraham back in chapter 4. We did talk about that, didn't we? Okay. So afterward, they the end of chapter 4, Moses and Aaron, they assemble the elders, and they perform the signs that God. Well, Moses performed the signs that God gave him, and the people believed when they heard the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel. So then they go to Pharaoh. Why in the world did Pharaoh even accept to see them? Anyone ever thought about that?
Not until now.
Here's Aaron, a slave. Here's Moses, a former Egyptian, but disappeared 40 years ago after Pharaoh's father or brother or somebody tried to kill him. How in the world do Moses and Aaron get in to see Pharaoh?
Maybe God put it on his heart. I
Could
don't
be.
know.
We're not told that. It also was possible that they caught Pharaoh out by the river, not in his palace. Then there's all, you know, Moses does know the palace. Moses, he could have, hey, there's a way in. We can get in this way.
Well, also, did they, I don't know, did they have access to him? Because in verse 15 it says, then the foreman of the sons of Israel came and cried out to the Pharaoh. So the foreman of the Israelites had access to the Pharaoh. So, maybe we might think that they didn't have access to the Pharaoh, but maybe they had a little bit more access than we might think.
Right, and that kind of goes back to something I was wondering last week that I forgot to bring up is Aaron was a slave. How does he just leave his duties as a slave and go to Midian to see his brother? And then we also wondered who went with Aaron, right? So there's a lot of unknowns we just don't know. We don't know, like we know in Esther, we're told, unless the king holds out his staff or whatever it was to you, you're dead. We don't know any of that with the Egyptians. And no matter what Pharaoh ends up, what time frame we end up talking about, we just don't know enough about where this is taking, who, when this is taking place to know all that availability of access, right? So,
So the Lord sent Aaron to meet Moses, right?
yes, but like did like
Yes.
Aaron's out making bricks, right? So, hey, the Lord spoke to me. I'm gonna go now. Like the taskmasters wouldn't have, hey, boy, get back to work.
Oh, that's true.
Right? So, you know, maybe Aaron wasn't a brickmaker, maybe he was something else. Moses' position in the household may have afforded Moses' family some privileges we're not aware of. Miriam cared for Moses. Like, there's no telling what kind of access they actually had. But this is the sell job. This is the initial statement. Let my people go that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness. That's all that's asked for. Now remember, we talked about this in chapter 4. God tells Moses, this is what you're going to do, but I know he won't let you go, and this will work out to power. So this is the setup. This is God working through Moses and Aaron to set up Pharaoh and set up Egypt for their judgment. And Pharaoh's response, this should be like the rallying cry for Christians when it comes to evangelism. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. I was talking with somebody today about they were talking about their first marriage, and they said, "Well, the first marriage, my first marriage wasn't in the Lord anyway." And I said, "Do you think God cares about that? Why was John the Baptist beheaded?" And we went through the whole story about why John was beheaded and how the people he was prophesying against, that their marriage was not right before God, were not followers of God. They weren't. Righteousness is righteousness. Wickedness is wickedness. And it does not matter whether we want to follow God or not. We're going to be, if God can overlook a sin because, well, I don't believe in God, so I'm not going to obey that. Well, then how is God going to judge anybody? So Pharaoh's answer, I reject God, so I'm not going to obey him. Oh, have fun with that. That's the call of the world right now. This is what the atheist, the, you know, you name it, who reject God, reject Jesus, this is their rallying cry. I reject this God. So I'm not going to obey him. And this is the, where we need to turn to. This is one of the things we can turn to kind of overcome that. There's a thousand ways to overcome that, but this is something we got to remember. We're talking with people that people who reject God, they do it for a reason. And they're not going to be easily swayed. Was Pharaoh easily swayed?
No.
Even if God had not hardened Pharaoh's heart, the first time God hardens Pharaoh's heart was like after, I think it was after the second plague or something. So it wasn't like God needed to do a whole lot to Pharaoh to get Pharaoh to harden his heart. Pharaoh's heart was already hardened. So, we got an uphill battle with people who are already, they've already decided to reject God. So verse 3.
Pharaoh always had a choice.
What, Randy?
Do we need to talk about Aaron's heart?
I didn't get you. You're breaking up.
I said Pharaoh always had a choice. Do we need to talk about God hardening his heart?
Yes, we'll get to that when, I think it's not until chapter 7, the first time he hardens his heart. So we'll get to that when it comes up. Maybe at 6. I always forget the first time he does it. I'm pretty sure it's after the second plague, but we will get to that eventually here in the next week or two. So he's, I'm not going to let him go. And remember, God said that he's not going to let you go except by compulsion, all hardness, heart, etc. Then they, Moses and Aaron, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey in the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Otherwise, he will fall upon us with pestilence or with sword. Notice the plea that they first make. Now, we're not told earlier before this is how they need to handle Pharaoh. But for whatever the happens here, this is their, if we don't go, he's going to be unhappy with us. So their appeal to Pharaoh is, as people, he's got gods that if he doesn't appease his gods, they're going to be unhappy. If we don't appease our God, he's not going to be happy. So that's their initial plea. It's not he's going to come down on you. It's he's going to come down on us. And does Pharaoh care?
No.
No.
Nope. Go back. Why do you pull the people away from their work? Go back to your work.
In fact, they increased their work.
Yes. That starts in verse 5. Again, Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are now many, and you would have them cease from their labor." So, again, Pharaoh, he's just looking at this practically. I can't have all you people go away for 3 days. You're a lot of people, and you're doing a lot. You can't just stop for 3 days and go work. By the way, I never really thought about this before. They're asking for 3 days' journey to go sacrifice. Why a 3 days' journey?
I am, You know, I wondered that too, but I always thought that God didn't really mean 3 days. He didn't intend for them to go back.
No, he didn't. That was the point. But, excuse me, God is always thinking ahead. God's always thinking beyond what we think. And I don't think God chose 3 days just because. Like, he could have said 7 days. And there would have been some spiritual meaning behind that. But he chose 3 days. What's always the shadow of Israel as slaves in Egypt? What's the always looked at as the fulfillment for us with that? Slaves in Egypt, bonds to Egypt, and then for us. That we were in some sort of bondage.
Yeah.
What were we in bondage to?
The sin.
Sin. The slavery in Egypt is equivalent to our slavery to sin. So, 3 days journey from Egypt. Now, I know that ends up not being the reality, but that's what they asked for initially. And then, how are we freed from sin? A 3 days Jesus rest. What, Randy?
Jesus overcame our sin by Jesus took care of our sin by overcoming death, and he was in the grave for 3 days.
After 3 days rest, after 3 days journey, right.
I get it now. I was struggling with that. I get it now.
Yeah. So, back to work. Pharaoh's just looking at this practically. He's not thinking spiritually. He doesn't care. The God of the Hebrews, you're my slaves, whatever. Henotheism, blah, blah, blah. So, fine. You want to go work? Or you don't want to work? You're going to work more. So he gives them more. The quota of bricks is the same, but you're going to have to get your own straw. And this is one of the things that really makes me question what Israel was actually doing. We talked about this back in one of the early chapters. We looked through and saw that the vast majority of Egyptian construction was done with mud bricks made with straw. And I just wanted to bring that up. Hopefully everyone remembers that. If not, you can go back and listen to it. It's recorded. But we talked about that. None of the temples, none of the spiritual stuff that Egypt did was made from mud bricks. Those were made from stone.
Yeah.
Mud bricks were made houses, made civic buildings, made commercial buildings, even made palaces for rich people and for pharaohs. So Pharaoh says, you are many people. So it's so many people that Egypt can't afford to lose this labor. So there's a lot of building going on in Egypt. And those mud bricks, you know, they don't just fall apart. So this isn't renovation work they're doing. This is new construction. So they've got their quota, but now they've got to get their own straw. Verse 9. Let the labor be heavier on the men, and let them work at it so that they will pay no attention to false words. What's Pharaoh, what's his intention with that?
I just think it must be, if he works them hard enough, they won't have time to listen to the words of Abraham and Isaac.
Aaron.
Aaron.
Right.
They'll be preoccupied with their own complaints.
Yep. And that's kind of what Pharaoh implies in verse, it's not really implied, I guess, but anyway, the point, well, I saw it, but it's not really not there in the text, was that, oh, you people don't want to, you have so little to do that you can ramble around about this. Okay, fine, here's more to do, so you're not so, like me today. I got too busy with something and forgot what I was doing. I didn't have time. Didn't have the mental capacity to remember what I was supposed to be doing, or I wasn't diligent enough to prepare for it mentally. So, and that's what he's hoping, is that they'll be so busy working, they'll be too exhausted once they get done working to fuss with this stuff.
Well, I think also it's pretty obvious that if Pharaoh can make it to where the, well, let me back up a little bit. Chapter 4, verse 31, the people believed, and they believed that God heard about their affliction. So God raises up Moses and Aaron to be their leaders. And all of a sudden, because of what Moses and Aaron are doing, their affliction is increased.
Yeah.
So the idea is to get them, you know, more turmoil, you know, for those Israelites, so they don't follow after Moses and Aaron.
And I imagine that the words of Pharaoh in verse 9, that they pay no attention to false words, that those would have been a decree from Pharaoh on down to the taskmasters. You guys get to work and stop listening to those false words.
Yes.
Also, they also could have even changed that to say these false prophets.
Yes.
And oddly enough, that's what the Egyptians listened to, as false prophets, false words. So, starting verse 10, the taskmasters, the people, and the foreman went out and spoke to the people. I'm not going to give you straw. Verse 11, you go and get straw for yourselves wherever you can find it, but none of your labor will be reduced. Verse 12, the people scattered through all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw. So it almost looks as if not only were the Egyptians not going to bring the straw to them to make the bricks, they weren't even going to let them have access to the straw supply to make the bricks. The people had to scatter through all the land to find what they could to make the bricks. So in a way...
Then they were rushing them.
Right. So in a way, what Pharaoh's trying to accomplish is happening, right? Is they're so scared of Pharaoh... Let's go. We got to find some straw. We got to find some straw. What is that straw? Oh, that make a brick, right? It's kind of working, at least at first. It's working kind of at first.
But do we all understand why straw was needed to make bricks, or is that a given, or?
Well, we covered it in, I think, the first lesson, that straw is what gave the mud its strength.
Yeah, we understand. We talked about that.
All right. Still true today.
What?
It's still true today.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And this also kind of goes back to... something we looked at, we considered with Aaron and Miriam and Moses and their mother, that Moses' mother didn't set Moses in the river Nile up in Goshen. He set him down around the Pharaoh's palace, down, I think it was Memphis. And Memphis is kind of in the middle of Egypt. So they weren't there. So this kind of goes back to the idea that not all the Israelites were in Goshen. So it kind of is, they're going, I think partly why they're going through the land is because they're already spread out through the land, and they're getting this word from the taskmasters, we got to find some straw. So they're going wherever they can find it to gather it. I didn't even see this earlier. Verse 14, the foreman of the sons of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, why have you not completed your required amount either yesterday or today in making bricks as previously? So that's, I've always thought that that's the foremen were beating the Israelites, but it looks like the foremen are being beaten.
Yeah.
Now they could have been Israelites, right? So you have the taskmasters who are definitely the Egyptians, and they could have had, like, that could explain Aaron and his ability to just leave. He could have been a foreman. Kind of like with Daniel and Mordecai as they're serving their kings. They use their slaves and make them officials or servants to help in the aid because they know the people, they know the language, etc. It could be that the foremen were Israelites and that's why they were beaten, and that kind of, you know, that rolls downhill. All that burden, Pharaoh to the taskmaster, to the foreman, to the people. And that kind of, verse 15 through 16, the foremen are crying out to Pharaoh. So that kind of, you know, why are you beating us? You're not giving us straw. It's the fault, behold, your servants are being beaten. It's the fault of your people. So that kind of implies that, again, these foremen are Israelites, not Egyptians. And then he says, you are lazy, very lazy, to these foremen. Let us go and sacrifice to Jehovah. So that this is all unfolding like how we theorized. Go now, work, for you must give them no straw, you must deliver the bread. Foremen of the sons of Israel saw they were in trouble because they were told. They left Pharaoh's presence. They met Moses and Aaron. They were waiting for them. They said to Moses, these are the foremen saying to Moses and Aaron, may the Lord look upon you and judge you. You have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. And I think it was Randy mentioned that earlier in verse 31 of chapter 4 about how God saw their afflictions and now their afflictions are being made heavier. And so, go ahead.
Did you get my text before?
I don't know, and my phone died.
Okay, well, anyway, I sent you a text telling you I was going to be on a call, but I wasn't feeling really good, so I might drop off. So okay. I am going to drop off.
Well, we're about done anyway, so we're just going to make a couple comments in verse 22 and 23.
Okay, I can wait that long.
Okay. So the foreman cried to Pharaoh. Pharaoh doesn't listen, so now the foreman have only one other place to go, Moses and Aaron. So they go complain to Moses and Aaron. And Moses returns to Jehovah. Why? And he doesn't call him Yahweh. He uses Adonai, Lord, Master. O Master, O Lord, why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you ever send me? So Moses is reverting right back to what he was before. Ah, why? No, not me. Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done harm to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. Now we go back to what we learned about Moses at the end of Deuteronomy. Righteous man. No one ever spoke with God the way Moses did. Well, right from the beginning, Moses wasn't necessarily fully buying into the plan. Moses had some struggles initially, and those struggles continue. The first thing goes wrong, what does Moses do? Oh, Lord, why? But in Moses' mind, even though he's been told this is what's going to happen, in Moses' mind, is this a small deal or is it a big deal?
In Moses' mind, going to the Pharaoh is a big deal.
Right, but then all these bad things happening after this. Is that a big deal to Moses or is that a little deal to Moses?
Well, it would... you mean all the plagues and such?
No, all this, what is chapter 5, how Pharaoh rejects them to let them go and then makes their labors hard. And now the foremen are coming and complaining to Moses.
That was a...
You would have thought that would be... I think
that's a big deal.
Big deal. But should it have been a small deal?
It should have.
It should have. God told him.
Well, no.
This is...
No.
Go ahead, Randy.
Think about Moses' attitude. What did he do when he was in Egypt earlier? He sees one of the Israelites being mistreated, and he kills a guy over it. So he's pretty protective of the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's another way to look at it, sure.
So now he sees all these Israelites, you know, their tasks getting, you know, greater and harder. And yeah, I think it was a big deal to him, even though God, you know, still, I mean, we do the same thing. God says we're going to, you know, something's going to happen. And then it doesn't happen just exactly like we think. You know, I'm sure Moses thought he'd go to Pharaoh and Pharaoh just, you know, kind of let him go.
Somebody said that to me this morning.
No,
Someone said that to me this morning. It was Augie. She was talking to a friend of hers. Her friend was going through some bad times. And why is God doing this to me? And that's what Moses is doing. Why have you done to these bad people? And Augie said to this friend of hers, why do you assume it's God doing this bad thing to you? Mm-hmm. It's, why do you assume it's God? And not only that, remember, we're not promised a life of ease and luxury and peace. We're promised a life of persecution and torment and frustration and evil upon us. But Moses, you know, whether he's fearful for the people from the perspective Randy mentioned, or if he's fearful for the people from the perspective that I think he's probably both, is that everything's going wrong, it's all blowing up, and I'm the one everyone's coming to. I think it's probably both. He's already forgotten what God's told him. This is what's going to happen. It's going to happen this way. He'll reject it, but I'm going to work my power. So he's, anyway. And we sometimes get like that. We make this wonderful, we think God's leading us to something, and we think it's going to all work out, and the first thing goes wrong is, whoa, man, what are you, is this really what you want, God? That's just life. So, all right, Bill needs to go, and that's basically chapter 5.
We do the same thing, blaming ourselves if we think that we're doing something that's right.
Yeah. So, all righty. I kind of missed what Randy said, too. His internet's been sketchy tonight for some reason. Or it's not sketchy, it's just slow. It's just slow. His connection is slow. So I think he's hearing us like 5-10 seconds after we say something. Okay. Hey, Randy, is the dude there?
Yeah.
Yeah? How is he?
Good.
Okay. All right. Well, did anyone say a prayer to start before I got on?
No, we just started reading.
No.
All right. Bill or Russ, you mind since we're having issues with Randy's connection tonight?
Could you get Russ to do it tonight? I'm having struggling myself.
Okay. Russ, can you pray?
Okay, I'll try.
Thanks, Russ.
Sure. Lord, give us thanks for this opportunity to have studied your word. May we apply it in our lives, what we've learned today. And may you bless everyone that needs to be blessed. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 So chapter 6 starts off as basically a continuation of chapter 5. So that'll be nice and easy for us to pick up. Right. Hope you feel better, Bill.
All right. See you later.
Yeah. Bye.
Ciao, everybody.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Stop recording.